No matter who you are, no matter what you do, everyone has a story to tell. And right here on this LGBT show is where it all starts. We lift our voices, share our stories, and we'll raise our pride. After all, we've come a long way since 1969 and the Stonewall riots, to the legalization of same-sex marriage, to the recognition of trans equality. I'm Mark Tara. Join me on this journey through Rainbow Country. Gay radio show giving voice to the LGBT community. And I'm getting settled in. Who am I? Well, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. A little bit about me. I am an LGBT content creator. I'm also a recording artist. And this is the station's gay radio show, Rainbow Country. Like I said, giving voice to the LGBT community. Let's get social, let's get interactive on Twitter, on Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. The email address, rainbowcountry@ciut.fm. The podcast for the show is on iTunes as well as on podomatic.com. So if you subscribe to the show, now you'll never miss an episode of Rainbow Country. And again, everything is hooked up through my website, marktara.com, marktara.com. So I'm back. As you know, this is Rainbow Country. Part of Rainbow Country, there's Erotic City, and there's also a place called Fluville. And my back's out, bitch. Those two places you don't want to go to. You don't want to have a flu, and in the middle of hacking up a lung, you throw your back out. But that's what happened to me. I'm on the mend. Thank you so much for those of you sending me your well wishes on social media. Much love. I appreciate it. And thank you so much for that. So, here we go. So, Pride Toronto members have voted to keep uniformed police officers from not marching in the Pride Parade. So again, that's not going to be happening apparently anymore. The inclusion of the Pride Parade, I think those days are gone. So now it's going to be exclusion. And the first ones will be police officers. That's unfortunate. And I think, in all honesty, this is my professional opinion. This is just me. But I think this is the beginning of Pride Toronto. And the Pride Parade as we know it, especially as being something that's inclusive. You don't want to start excluding people. It's not the way. Let's move on. So, have you seen the most recent issue of Now magazine? Well, inside there's an article about the gay village and about cannabis culture and some homophobia that's been happening. It's happened to myself. As a bystander, believe it or not, I'll share that with you in a few minutes. So, cannabis culture, it's in the gay village on Church Street. And it's owned by Mark Emery. They call him the Prince of Pot. Good for him. So, apparently what's been happening is a few days ago, I guess, some blue paint was splattered on the outside of cannabis culture. So here's the deal. So cannabis culture and Flash is a male strip bar that's on Church Street. And it's all basically part of the same building, if you want to think of it that way. There's no separation, nothing. So on one side, there's Flash, this is the male strip bar. On the other side, there's Cannabis Culture. On Monday nights at Flash, there's an event put on called FML, Fuck My Life. And it's put on by the Mojo people, Joey Viola. And so I think it starts around 11 o'clock at night at Flash. And so people line up, that sort of thing. And what's been happening is some patrons of Cannabis Culture going in to get their weed, which is a great thing, going in to get their stuff. When they come out, or maybe when they're going in, they'll make homophobic remarks. And so it's been going on for the last little while. A lot of it is not reported, okay? Because I think if the organizers, the owners of Cannabis Culture reports that stuff, they don't want their weed taken away. So that's been happening. So I guess maybe someone, you know, couldn't take it anymore and threw some paint onto the outside of Cannabis Culture. So here's where my personal story comes in. So I'm standing outside of Flash one day about 3 o'clock in the afternoon waiting to take someone upstairs to show them the space that is above Cannabis Culture, because you can rent that space out for private events, that sort of good thing. So I'm standing outside. This is 2-3 weeks ago. In the middle of the afternoon, around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm waiting for this person. And so I'm just standing there, and these two guys, straight guys, walk by. One of them looks at me, I look at him. They go past me. I didn't hear anything. Then this woman comes up to me and says, "Never mind them, I think you're fabulous." And I look at her and I think to myself, what are you talking about? So she said, those two guys that just walked by, that just went into the weed store, they were making some homophobic remarks towards you. Then I said to her, well, what did they say? And she then said to me, you don't need to hear what they said. I think you're fabulous anyway. And then she proceeded to walk along her way. It never dawned on me to try to talk to these guys or to try to engage this woman even more. I was just standing there minding my own business, and this perfect stranger, she was nice enough, came up and, you know, shared some information but didn't share all of it. And I didn't think, I have a radio show, let's talk about this. Didn't enter my mind. I was a little shocked, to be honest, because this is 2017, and this is downtown Toronto. This is in the heart of the gay village. Here's my take on this. If you're coming in to buy pot, that's great. Do what you want to do. Live your life the way you want to live it. But don't come into the gay village bringing your own prejudices and then start lashing out at the people that are around you if you're in the gay village because they happen to be gay. It doesn't look good on you. It doesn't reflect good on you as a person, hopefully as an enlightened person, or maybe not so much. You're coming into my neighborhood. You're coming into the gay village. There are rainbow flags all over the place. You know, it's not the greatest thing. And again, this is not about pot smokers. This is not about selling cannabis. This is about ignorance and some people acting out on their ignorance, a lack of knowledge. That's what this is all really about, if you ask me. So there you go. I'm going to get off my soapbox and let you know that this is episode 32. And on this episode, I'm spotlighting John Farrell, head of philanthropy for the 519, a great, great organization. So my friends, this episode of Rainbow Country begins right now.
Hi, this is Carol Pope on CIUT 89.5 FM.
They don't know who I am, yet they're talking about me. Trying to bury me underground, but I won't let them do it. Cause I'm too loud, yeah, I'm too proud. Sitting high on those trench clouds. Only thing you need to know is this is what trends looks like. 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 Long story short, we're 6 foot fly. Long story short, we're super fly.
Joining me now, Director of Philanthropy for the 519 Community Center, John Farrell. Welcome on board.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been fundraising for, what, over 12 years now?
Over 12 years is correct.
So tell me, how did you become a professional fundraiser? How did you get into philanthropy?
Well, you know what? I would say that most people kind of my age and Do I have to say my age? Let's just say, you know, I've been around the block once or twice. Kind of came to it through circuitous routes. And in my case, I got my degree at the University of Waterloo in urban and regional planning. And after kind of doing that schooling and kind of working in the field for a bit, I realized it's not what I wanted to do. What I really wanted to do was to kind of work in the first and foremost in the arts. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I was able to get a position with a small performing arts company. And because there weren't lots of positions, one of the positions that they were looking for was a fundraiser. Now, I went into that position not having any experience, but I was supported by a mentor who helped me through that first 6 months. As I've grown to discover, fundraising really is more of a art than a science. It's something that people often gravitate to who are interested in developing relationships, supporting good causes, helping organizations be successful or be more successful. So it was definitely something I graduated into from the point of view of it being, I felt, a really good fit for what I was interested in. I mean, nowadays, not to make myself sound too ancient, there's a far more regimented curriculum, fundraising school programs that are out there that a lot of younger fundraisers have actually gone through.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's become a much more robust, I think, profession. And it's a profession that certainly is growing because the needs of community organizations are continuing to grow. And that's why there are so many charities, and that's why there's so many more fundraisers out there working.
So you've been with the 519 since 2013?
2013 is correct.
Give me a bit of history on the 519, how it got started, how long it's been around, that sort of thing.
You know what? It's a super cool story, and I'm not sure everybody knows it. So if people know the 519, it's of course located at 519 Church Street. And that is how it got its name. So the building that the 519 is in is actually was actually built in 1906. And it was actually the home of Toronto's very first Granite Club. And if folks know the Granite Club, we're talking Tony, privileged, exclusive.
So let's back up a minute. What's the Granite Club? Because I haven't heard of this.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, the Granite Club is a long-established kind of a club that exists all over the world.
Okay.
And Toronto had its very first one, and it was located in the building that is now the 519.
Okay.
The Granite Club continues to exist. They're up on Bayview.
Okay.
They're far more open-minded and far more inclusive than they were then.
Okay.
But certainly when they developed and when the building opened, it was very, very privileged. I love the fact that I'm working in a building that has such a history, because we've gone from being one of the more most exclusive, privileged kind of environments to a space that is open and welcome to everybody. I've never worked in such an inclusive work environment than I ever have before, and it is constantly inspiring. So in terms of the 519, the building that we now reside was sitting vacated through most of the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. It was underutilized. In the early 70s, there was some development pressures in the village, and some community organizers got together and said, hey, we need to save this building. We need community space. We don't have space for doing community programs. So they went to City Hall. And City Hall, in their wisdom at the time, agreed and purchased the 519 for $1, set up a board of management structure, and the city agreed to provide core funding to kind of keep the lights open. And the board was responsible for animating, programming, doing whatever needed to be done to make that a dynamic community space that would be in response to community needs. Because that's why it was set up. So we're one of 11 community centers under the City of Toronto.
Wow.
So what to me is really interesting about our history, and I think it's our history somewhat parallels the history of the LGBT LGBTQ movement itself.
Okay.
In the 1970s, 1976 is when we actually opened the doors. So we're actually celebrating our 40th anniversary this year.
Wow.
But, you know, we're being kind of quiet about it. I don't know. Maybe we're getting super sensitive about our age. But back in 1976, the 519 was not an LGBTQ focus center at all. In fact, it was probably at some point in the late 70s when a community organization who was LGBT came forward to the board of management and said, we want to hold something there. And it actually caused a bit of a stir because we all know the political environment in the late 70s was not what it is now.
Right.
And the board, in their wisdom, agreed to allow this community partner to be there. And I think as our community has grown, as rights have grown, as recognition has grown, the 519 has grown because we have responded to our community.
Right.
And as the gay village became even more of a gay village through the late 70s and certainly through the 80s and 90s and up until today, we've responded. So now we are very, very proud to be Canada's largest LGBTQ community center.
So on that note,
yes.
Let's take a break.
Sure.
And we'll be right back.
What you say, I am beautiful. So what, I'm different. I'm still beautiful. You can't bring me down. I am beautiful. Got to be myself. And I'm beautiful. Don't care what you say, I am beautiful. So what, I'm different. I'm still beautiful. You can't bring me down. I am beautiful. Got to be myself. And I'm beautiful. Cry. I am beautiful. Go ahead and stare. I'm still beautiful. You can't make me doubt that I'm beautiful. Got to be myself. And I'm beautiful. You can't make me cry. I am beautiful. Go ahead and stare. I'm still beautiful. You can't make me doubt that I'm beautiful. Got to be myself. And I'm beautiful.
Myself, and I'm
What was it about the 519 and that organization that made you, as a professional fundraiser, want to become part of that organization? What inspired you? What was it about that organization that inspired you to become part of it?
Sure. I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I feel really, really privileged to be in a situation where I'm working for an organization that is doing so much good work in support of the LGBTQ community. I definitely was drawn to the 519 by the fact that it is and continues to be just kind of a wonderful, warm, supportive, inclusive space for everyone to feel connected. I love the fact that when I'm dealing with donors, they know that they're supporting an organization that is really changing lives and helping people be as successful or to overcome or to achieve great things. It's very heartfelt to actually be in that environment, and I'm so pleased that I am.
So you've been with the 519 since 2013.
That's correct.
So what type of programs are offered through the 519?
Sure. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing organization that does so much. In fact, organizationally, we've spent a lot of time more recently trying to talk about the kind of work we do in a way that people kind of understand and get. And last year, we decided to really kind of talk up the fact that what the 519 does is we provide service, space, and leadership. Mm-hmm. And when we found those words, we recognized that almost everything we did literally kind of hung very nicely to each of them. So in terms of service, the 519 has a whole host of direct service programs that are offered to members of the LGBTQ community. In 2015, we had interactions with 265,000 community members. In terms of our direct services, 60,000.
Wow.
And
those are big numbers.
They are big numbers. I mean, as a community center, there's always stuff going on at the 519. In terms of our own programs, we offer a range of services in support of LGBTQ newcomers and refugees. Mm-hmm. So as folks will know, lots of the Syrian refugees that have been coming in over the last 8 to 10 months, certainly many of them are coming to the 519 when they arrive. Mm-hmm. And we are able to kind of support their process of becoming integrated, being part of the community, being made to feel welcome,
right,
to help introduce opportunities to them in terms of maybe other kind of referral services that they need. We also offer a host of programs for members of the trans community. The 519 is really proud of what we do in support of trans community members, and certainly have long been advocating for lots of the things that are now finally coming to light.
Right.
We also have programs for LGBTQ seniors. Mm-hmm. We also have programs for street-involved community members. Mm-hmm. We have drop-in programs. And we also really help out queer parents. So there's lots happening on the service side of the 519. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're also a space. 24,000 net square feet, 18 rooms.
And let's talk about Fabernac.
Oh, my God. Of course, let's talk about Fabernac. Fabernac is definitely one of the on-site services we offer at the 519. It is a social enterprise cafe. Mm-hmm. It is open from Monday to Friday from 8:30 to 4, and on Saturdays for a fabulous, fabulous brunch. And the great thing about Fabernac is it's very much been designed under a social enterprise model, which basically means that we bring in folks working behind the scenes who maybe more traditionally have had difficulties getting employment. Mm. So we use it as a training opportunity for people to develop skills either in the kitchen mm-hmm. or on the serving side who might not otherwise have opportunities to kind of pick up those skills.
Right.
And we've certainly had a number of kind of people that have gone through the Fabernac process mm-hmm. who have gone on to really kind of great careers and events and catering. So we're really proud of what we're doing there.
Yeah.
And we serve great food.
And that's part of a relatively new addition to the 519.
Yeah, the 519 went through a very significant renovation mm-hmm. and expansion, probably between 2006 and 2010. And we added a new wing. We added 40% more of community space. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, as I said, we have 24,000 square feet. We have like 18 rooms that are bookable. And as such, we have about 150 community organizations that use our space on an ongoing basis. Mm. And I tell you, Mark, it covers the bases. On any day of the week, you would come into the 519 and be surprised and delighted, I think, by mm-hmm. the fact that there is such variety always happening there.
Sure.
Like at one point, you might have singing out there, practicing. Mm-hmm. They're a regular space user at the 519. Another night, you might come and Counterpoint Orchestra might be rehearsing. On another night, Rainbow Triangles, which is a group of community members who love dance and love to come and dance with each other.
Right.
It's a space for them to do that. And what's great about the space we offer at the 519, it really is about providing it free of charge.
Mm.
Like, and this harkens back right to when the 519 was developed and opened in 1976. We want to be responsive to the community. We want to give space to the community mm-hmm. so they can do what they want to do to be able to participate, celebrate, and be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of the third way we talk about what we do at the 519 is around the mantle of leadership.
Okay.
And one of the things that we've done incredible work in, particularly over the last year, 2 years, is around education and training. We have a full-on education and training department, which also operates under that social enterprise model. And really and truly what our education and training team has been able to do is to set up a series of trainings and resources that not only help us internally, but that are very much outward facing. So one of the pieces of work that that department did was late in 2015, they produced something called Creating Authentic Spaces, and it was all about gender expression and mm-hmm. gender identity. And it was a resource guide that was very much put out not only for the LGBTQ community, but particularly for organizations, governments, not-for-profits, but also for corporations that were really interested in knowing what it means to be either a member of the community that's supportive of all members of the community mm-hmm. or how to be a good ally. I mean, these are things that, as lots of issues within our community are more well-known. I mean, one of the things that I love is the fact that, the trans community, they're being recognized, and I think understanding about what it means to be trans is
right.
also, there's an appetite for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Our education and training department worked very closely with the trans community on the development of this resource.
Right.
And I know we're enormously proud of it. So that resource is available from our 519 website. And I tell you, it's an amazing, amazing tool. Because I think as much as most people might think they know, you know, there's more to learn.
And just give out the website real quick.
The519.org.
Okay. So on that note, John Farrell, let's take a break and we'll be right back. John, we've spoken about the 519. Let's talk about you. So, any pets?
Oh, my God. I'm the hugest lover of my dog.
What type?
It's a Boston Terrier. Okay. His name is Nico. I got him just over a year ago. He was a rescue. He's just kind of the most amazing dog. Mm-hmm. Cute, black and white, adorable. And I love the story of how I got him. I mean,
how did you get him?
Well, I mean, rescues, I mean, there's such a need for good homes for dogs. And I'm very fortunate that Nico actually was not in a situation where he was an abused dog. Mm-hmm. He was in a good home. But the story is, you know, he had an original owner who was a single woman, and I know she loved Nico, but then she ended up getting a new man in her life, and the new man and Nico didn't get along.
Really?
So I don't know. I think she should have gotten rid of the man, but she kept the man, and Nico was put up for adoption.
Are you kidding?
No, it's all true, but I have to tell you, I mean, I couldn't be more thrilled. It all has worked out in the end, and he's adorable.
You know, it'd be interesting to find out if her and the man stayed together.
That would be interesting. That would be interesting. Hopefully she doesn't hear this broadcast and track me down. Anyway, I wish her nothing but happiness, but certainly from my point of view, Nico just is...
You won out.
What's that?
You won out.
I definitely.
So, John, I want to get your take on this. So, the Gay Village here in Toronto, it's been going through some changes over the last few years. A lot of, you know, bars, restaurants, that sort of thing, closed. There's no more women's bars or restaurants in the village. What do you think is happening to Toronto's Gay Village, John?
Well, you know what, and I'm just speaking on my own behalf as opposed to the 519. I mean, the 519 is very much part of the Gay Village and has grown and developed kind of in response to the village around us. So the village has always been very good to the 519, and I think we're good to the village. On a personal note, I mean, I think a number of things has happened. I think as our rights and as members of the LGBTQ community have gotten stronger, and we've become more confident and comfortable and accepted, I think a lot of people ended up moving away from the village. Mm. And it's not that same focal point of attention. I would say most of the queer millennials probably spend very little time in the village, and it's because there are pockets of places where our members want to go that just at this point in time doesn't include the village. I think things go in waves. I think there will be an opportunity for the village to continue to be an important place for members of our community to go, whether all of them go there or not. I mean, there's lots of things that I love about the village. And
like what?
Oh, I have to tell you, my favorite things are like, you know, when we have a beautiful kind of sunny day here in Toronto, there's nothing more fabulous than walking down Church Street and seeing people you know sitting on the patios along Church Street. I mean, to me, that's a great, great feeling. I often find that it might take me double the amount of time to walk home just simply because I'm running into people and chatting with them or even spontaneously deciding to have a drink with them. There's a great camaraderie that I think exists on Church Street. Okay. And to me, it's something that I very much am drawn to.
And what do you think? So that's a positive aspect. What do you think is a not so positive aspect that the LGBT community can work on in terms of Toronto's Gay Village?
I mean, one of the things that I would love to see is just a slight refreshing of the businesses that are located there, that it's a bit more diverse in terms of its offerings.
Right.
I kind of feel like there hasn't been a lot of new investments that have created opportunities for businesses to be there.
Right.
As you pointed out, some restaurants have closed. I know the fact that there is no dedicated bar for the lesbian community, I just think is shocking.
I was just going to say.
It's shocking.
It is. And I find that interesting because it's shocking on one level, but on another level, there isn't the outcry. Like, I'm not hearing lesbian women saying, we want to be represented. Because I think if they spoke up, something might happen.
Right. No, I totally agree with you. Like, even when one very well-loved space, Slacks, ended up closing its door finally about 2 years ago, I think there continued to be some hope that business would be reestablished. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that didn't end up happening. I'm not sure. Certainly when I chat with lesbian friends of mine, I mean, they're outraged and definitely very grumpy about it. But there hasn't been a hue and cry. I think there would be a great opportunity for a business owner to kind of look at what's available and see what could be done. I do think that the politics of and again, this is my personal opinion. You know, I think there are restrictions on what kind of businesses can operate in the village, and I think it's kind of put a little bit of a chokehold on being a bit more creative and adventuresome. When you look at how other Toronto communities have gentrified so beautifully, it seems a bit surprising that Toronto, our Church and Wellesley community has not been able to do that. I just know that when you walk along Queen Street or you walk along Ronson's Vales or any of these other kind of up-and-coming neighborhoods, I mean, there's just kind of cool spaces opening up all over the place. And it would be so great to get that vibe into the village and have it become more than just a nightclub. Going out for drinks kind of destination. That's just kind of my personal opinion. Again, I work in the village. I don't live in the village, but I'm on the outskirts of the village. And I'm very glad it's there. And I do think there will be a wave where, you know, it'll suddenly become very cool again to be part of the village.
Well, John Farrell, Director of Philanthropy for the 519 Community Center here in downtown Toronto. I have to say thank you so much for being part of the show and sharing your time and your energy here.
Thanks, Mark. It's always a pleasure to be here and to speak to you.
City Councillor Kristen Wong Tam, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
CIUT 89.5 FM, and you're listening to Rainbow Country, the station's gay radio show giving voice to the LGBT community. I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. So that was my spotlight on John Farrell, head of philanthropy for the 519 Community Center here in downtown Toronto, in the heart of Toronto's gay village. We also heard music from LGBT recording artist Lucas Charlie Rose. This is what trans looks like. Rizzy X Tamine, beautiful. Villy Cooper, deeper. And at the very end there, Corey Andrew, don't you want my love? Don't forget, get social, get interactive. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. The email address, rainbowcountry@ciut.fm. And the podcast for the show is on iTunes as well as on podomatic.com. And again, everything is hooked up through my website, marktara.com. Next week, it'll be my second trans episode. I'll be featuring writer Christine Newman, who's also a retired trans activist, as well as recording artist Rye Daisies. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you. Taking us out, Bronski Beat, Small Town Boy.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Segato, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Rainbow Country has been brought to you in part by Inspired Media, Inc. If it's LGBTQ, it's in their publications. The Pink Pages Directory, Pink Play Mags, The Buzz Magazine, and popular talk show On the Couch. 27 years and expanding. InspiredMediaInc.ca.